Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. It's an interview today, Kieran, so as ever, I'm not going to pretend that we've not seen each other for 24 hours because we've seen each other so recently, we're still chuckling at the name Winklevoss, which is how we ended the pod that you will have listened to yesterday. I still can't tell you what about three parent face Davis either, unfortunately. Ali's away on tour, so I might have to phone her up and really annoy her and just go, you'd never get anyone. And we have an interview today, Kieran. It's a catch-up interview, which we rarely get around to doing. We're always promising to do them with people. But almost exactly a year ago, we spoke to Chris Ewing, who was chairman of the Caledonian Braves, which was sort of a brand new, it's a rebrand of an existing football team in Scotland, very passionate about his club and about the community it's in, as you'll hear. And this is what he had to say. Chris, thank you so much for joining us again. We're always promising to do catch-up interviews on this show, and we never get around to doing it for various administrative reasons. And because, let's face it, we talk to people, we forget them. But yours is such an interesting story that we thought we had to do a catch-up, and it's almost a year since we spoke to you. So if you could just remind us, Chris, who you are, what the football team is, and if you could just let us know where you were in the table this time last year and where you are now.
Yeah, guys, so thanks very much for having me back on. I'm Chris Ewing. I'm the owner of Caledonian Braves, a fifth division club playing in Scotland, just outside of Glasgow. And I think this time last year, we're probably around about mid-table. And again, this time this year, we're more or less around about mid-table. So kind of the same kind of area, the Lowland League.
As I say, it's almost exactly a year ago we spoke to you, and you were just about to start your campaign to sell a 25% stake in the club to football fans across the world, basically. So I think it's April the 29th, I believe that. So tell us how that's been going.
Yeah, so I guess in the last year, the league position hasn't changed so much, but there's been a lot that's happened off the park. We lost actually 9 players in the closed season, 7 starters, and that's one of the reasons why we launched the WeFunder campaign to try and create a global ownership community, in part to try and bring money into the club so that we can, we can be sustainable, financially sustainable, and also as a platform for growth. But quite simply as well, because the sole owner of the football club at that time, I'm quite limited in where I can take the club alone. But also, I felt it far more exciting to be able to share the club with people. So since last year, we launched our WeFunder campaign. We put the club on WeFunder.com, and it's opened up to anybody across the world, essentially, who would like to buy a share in a football club for $100. To date, we have over 900 owners who come from 30 different countries. The majority of them come from the United States of America, as you may be surprised to learn after the whole Wrexham thing. There's an influx of owners in football done in England from America. But we have 900 owners, over 700 come from the United States. We have, amazingly, believe it or not, we have 49 states of the 50 represented from the United States. So we're actually just missing Wyoming. So if there's any cowboys out there, and I mean the cowboys with horses, I mean, then get on WeFunder and buy a share. But I mean, that's for me, that just blows my mind. You know, it's just amazing to have so many people from around the world who have bought in at the club. Vindicates, I guess, the idea. And apart from anything else, we have such a wide and varied ownership community. You know, we have one of the strength and conditioning coaches of the Boston Celtics as an owner. You know, we have an executive, music executive, someone who works in the NFL with the New York Giants as an owner. Somebody who's in the White House, chief of staff, is an owner of the club. We have a NASA, believe it or not, we have a NASA supporters club. We have scientists at NASA who own the club as well. So there's been a lot happening in the last year for sure.
And you say it was $100 a share. Were people limited to the amount of shares they could buy?
No, I mean, I think the most that we've had invested was $5,000. But most people, I think the average buy-in is $200. But the minimum was set by WeFunder, which is the platform where the club sits, is $100. So one share for $100, essentially, keeping it nice and simple. But the idea behind that was to try and dispel the myth that you need to be a multi-millionaire or a movie star to own a football club, you know. You see today with clubs like PSG and Man City, it's state-run football clubs, same with Newcastle. And my idea was to give football back to the fans and say, you know what, doesn't matter what you do for a living. If you can afford $100, you can own part of a football club. And as much as obviously bringing money into the club and trying to grow as a football club, again, and I've said it before and I'll keep saying it, it's about people, it's about community, it's about trying to build something unique and leave a heritage. So it's been exciting so far.
And what do the owners get for their share, Chris? Do they get any? Are you one of those clubs that is trying to give everyone a say in what goes on, or do they? Is this a nominal ownership or what?
So I guess full disclosure, for the most part, they get headaches on a Saturday. You know, the Saturdays will never be the same again. It's a roller coaster, and there's nothing like a game of football to spoil your weekend. But that's essentially what it is. You know, it's to give people the opportunity to be involved. Everyone has a voice. You know, we're in the process of creating a club charter. We have a Discord channel where the owners are involved in, and they chat to each other, and you know, there's a real sense of, it's very early days, don't get me wrong, but there's a real sense of community. And we talk, you know, one of the buzzwords around football at the moment is fan engagement. I think before we can talk about fan engagement, we talk about fan consideration. And I think that's what we try to do first and foremost, is consider people. And it's great. And it's, I mean, I'll be sitting at home watching Netflix and I'll get an email saying that someone's just invested $100 from Buenos Aires, and then someone from Los Angeles, and then someone from San Diego, and then someone from East Kilbride, the outskirts of Glasgow. So it's a lot of fun.
I have to say, for once, Chris, my football team gave me a brilliant weekend. Been winning this unexpectedly brilliant weekend, which is fantastic. You mentioned the Wrexham effect, Chris. Is it not also possible that, you know, with the Scottish diaspora, that there are so many people of Scottish descent in America as well, and that they might be... just wanted to touch base with the home, with the home country, so to speak.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that's it's a good point. You know, a lot of the folk that have bought into the club, they can leave a comment, and a lot of them say that they do have heritage somewhere down the line, you know, from Scotland, great-grandfathers or their mum or dads, or they just in general have an affinity towards Scotland. You know, I think Scotland is generally seen to be quite a friendly country, quite forward-thinking, believe it or not. And certainly we're very passionate about sport, particularly football. So that's been the kind of, that's been the vibe from a lot of folk who've bought in. We also create quite a lot of content. I don't know if you've seen that. You know, we have TikTok videos and, you know, we do reels on Instagram. And the idea is to try and bring the club into the lives of people and have a bit of fun. So there was, if you go on TikTok, Caledonian Braves TikTok, you'll see me in a kilt, washing my face in a lock, get a day in the life of a Scottish owner feeding my cows. But it's all a bit of fun, you know, and it's just, I always say we can take the job seriously, but we don't take ourselves seriously. We stream the games live online, so any owners around the world, you know, or even down south can watch the games live on a Saturday as well. So we actually go to great lengths to try and bring the clubs into the hearts and minds of folk, no matter where they are in the world, through content.
I like the way you make a distinction between round the world and down south. just so people know. And also, seriously, Chris, in a kilt, washing your face in a lock. You'll be tossing a caber next to a lock.
I need to go to the gym. Before I start tossing cabers, I need to go to the gym for a few months, I think, first and foremost.
Kieran, I want to bring you in here. It's, Chris mentioned the Wrexham effect. Obviously, that's a big part of it. Do you think this is a funding model that more and more teams will look at? And especially looking at America, we've talked a lot about American owners trying to muscle in on the Premier League and the Championship. But do you think this is a way for clubs at Chris's level to sensibly get some investment in?
I think if the club wants to grow as a community asset, then yes. There's a limited number of people with large checkbooks who can afford to buy clubs at perhaps a slightly different point in the football pyramid in both England and Scotland. And as Chris says, it's a bit of fun. You do now have skin in the game every Saturday, because you've got, as well as an emotional investment, you've got a wee bit of financial investment. I think most people, if we're honest, Chris, are not expecting to get a financial return from this. Certainly not in the short term.
But, for sure, yeah.
You know, if the club is able to invest that money to grow the on the field talent, and also to provide facilities for fans, because, you know, what happens if some of the owners are now playing a visit to Scotland? Well, where are they going to go? Ideally, they're going to go along and watch the Braves play on a Saturday afternoon as well.
It's funny you should say that, Kieran, because we've actually had, believe it or not, we've actually had people from the United States come to watch Caledonian Braves. We had a guy a couple of weeks ago from Boston. You know, we've got owners coming from America this weekend. It's our final home game of the season. It absolutely blows my mind to think that we've got owners from all over the world that are interested in this wee football club in Scotland in the fifth division. You're absolutely right. It is about having a bit of fun. But on a slightly more serious note, our wage budget just for our players is in the region of £47,000 a year, which is at the lower end of the Lowland League. We think if we can, you know, get in the region of £100,000, we could have we could improve the squad to a level where we could compete, you know, for promotion. And I think where it becomes really interesting, particularly in Scotland more so than elsewhere, is to go from Tier 5 in Scotland to the Championship, you know, and then maybe the Premiership, would take far less money and investment than any other major league in the world. You know, to go from Tier 5 in England to the Premier League, you're talking hundreds of millions of pounds. If we get it right on and off the park, we could make significant progress and rise up through the pyramid for maybe £500,000-£700,000, you know. Obviously, it's football, so there's no guarantees, but that has to be the benchmark. And I think when you start looking at clubs like Red Bull Leipzig, who've went up through the leagues into the Bundesliga, that's been financed slightly different because it's been a huge multinational corporation that's financed that. But the principle is the same. If the money is invested wisely, there's an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've been doing a few Wrexham interviews and podcasts and talking to the media there. And you know what Wrexham have achieved, back-to-back promotions, is great. But it's the minimum you would expect for a club which has a League One budget in first of all the National League and then League Two. When they get to League One next season, they'll find things quite a bit tougher. And if they get then to the Championship, where, as we said on too many occasions, yet the average losses are £470,000 a week, don't care whether you're Hollywood stars or not, you know, that's a lot of money to have to shell out on an annual basis.
I have to say, Chris, you must have looked good in that kilt, because you 1.4 million people saw it on TikTok. So
that was a different one actually. That was we had I still look good in a kilt though. You can't take that away from me. I think anybody looks good in a kilt. If you had to see a Scotsman in a kilt, it doesn't look good. There's one for the listeners. There's a debate there.
Well, do you know what? I always, if I go to a wedding and you see a mate in a kilt, I always think, yeah, they do look cooler than the rest of us.
It's always fun.
Talking about the promotions and the wage bill, Chris, how far up the Scottish table would you have to go before you went full-time?
Well, I mean, that ultimately where we are at the moment, the average age of our squad is 21, so we have one of the youngest squads in the league probably. We've got Ross McNeil, and I want divulge his age online here. He won't be happy with me. Ross McNeil, he's our top goal scorer, scored over 20 goals this season. He's reaching 30, but apart from that, young guys. So we could essentially go full time even next year, because it's young guys who've been at clubs like Rangers, Celtic, being released. Again, it's all about budget, you know. But it's young players, you know. Going full time with young players is maybe not the same as going full time with senior experienced pros, you know. But the idea for us is maybe to try and reach a hybrid model where some of the younger guys come in full time, and maybe the older guys come in just a couple of nights a week. And to a certain extent, we already have that. You know, the guys train Tuesday and a Thursday for the most part, but we have a group who comes in on a Monday and Friday as well. So we're not a million miles away from being where we need to be, you know. I think we've already raised just a couple of thousand dollars shy of $300,000, which is outstanding. You know, it's very exciting, and we're hoping that we can increase and improve upon that in the coming months.
And have you got plans with what you're going to do with that $300,000?
When I tell people I'm going to Mexico for a month to lie on a beach with a pina colada, they think I'm joking. ultimately, any penny that comes into the club, first and foremost, ever grateful for that, whether it's $100, whether it's $5,000. But that money, every single penny of that will go back into the club. And it will not be my sole decision. The owners will obviously have a say in where that goes. You know, ultimately, the obvious one is to try and put the money into the playing squad. I'm sure my manager would be delighted with that, you know, if we gave him $300,000. But you always say you have to be ambitious, but you have to be intelligent with your ambition, you know. And we have to ensure that the club is in a good footing for the next 2, 3, 4 years on and off the park, you know. So that will be put to the owners and we'll decide what we're going to do with that money. But certainly some of it will go towards improving the squad, maybe improving the facilities, maybe improving the content that we create, you know, the live streams and different things like that.
And as you say, Chris, I mean, you've raised nearly $300,000, which is an exceptional amount of money. But your original goal was $750,000, wasn't it? So you're a little bit short of that. Has that affected future plans?
No, the $750,000 for was the big hairy goal, if you like. You know, that was the dream scenario. I think if we're being realistic, anything above $200,000 would have been impactful. I think when we start to get to $300,000-$400,000, then it starts to become exciting. Most of the money that we've brought in has been organic. You know, we obviously did the podcast over a year ago. We had a few folk that came to the club through this, so thankful to you guys for the opportunity. But we haven't, up until recently, started doing paid ads just this week, but we haven't did any paid ads. We haven't did any real strategy. It's been mostly organic, which has been really encouraging. So I think if we can, you know, put together a good PR marketing strategy with some decent paid ads to support that, there's no reason I don't think why we can't reach the 500,000, 600,000. And then we start having a real project. You know, then we start saying, wow, this is game-changing, again, game-changing opportunity. And then there's the side narrative that comes with that where you're looking to leverage sponsorship, you know. There's no other club, I don't think, if we can get Wyoming, there's no other club, and maybe Kieran can help here, but I don't think there's any other club in the UK that would have owners in 50 states of America. You know, so that's a very unique selling point for us, fifth division club in Scotland. We've got NBA stars, people in the NFL. We've got three Kansas City Current, the Patrick Mahomes team in Kansas. Three women footballers have invested in the club as well. So it's a very exciting ownership model that we have as well. It's about the quality of the owners as well, as apart from the diversity.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Actually, that is a good model as well, because then once you start to get the fans in every state talking to each other, so you get them to be a proper community club as well, and then other people see that they can have fun, not just on match days, but these guys are talking to each other, having quizzes, meeting up, and it's all based around the Caledonia Braves. So that gives any football fan, soccer fan in America something to aspire to as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think as well, you have to, I know it's been said before by a lot of people, but it has to be a bit more than just football. You know, the club has to be relevant beyond a Saturday at 3 and 5 o'clock. You know, it has to be, you know, it has to almost be an entertainment brand. I know that's easy to say and it's very difficult to achieve, but what we would like to do, particularly in Glasgow, because it's a big music town, is be able to bridge the gap between sport and music and fashion. So we're looking at, you know, we're speaking to people like DF Concerts, King Tut's, the Barrowlands. You know, how can we get music involved? Like I've said before as well, in Glasgow, working class Glasgow, you either play football or you play guitar. I was neither good at either of them, played football a wee bit. But, you know, but I think speaking to people in a language that they understand, and that is art, sport, football, you know, music. So we're trying to do that as well, and that's very exciting.
I'm glad to hear King Tut's is still going. So
thriving. What a place.
I had some cracking gigs there back in the day. People who listened to our first interview with you, Chris, may be wondering why you haven't had more investment from France. So could you remind new listeners of the French connection with your club and tell us if that French connection is still happening?
The French connection is alive and well, the old alliance. So yeah, just we haven't had much investment from France because quite simply it's not a market at the moment we have targeted. You know, initially we looked at the in fact, there's probably not even that many investors from the UK. It's mostly been 85% American, so we'll look to rectify that. But to answer your question, I came to France when I was 24 with £40 in my pocket. I was supposed to come for 10 days. 20 years later, married to a French woman, three kids. French Football Academy in Glasgow, football club in that city, you know, and I get my French nationality. So actually Caledonian Braves, before it was a football club, was a football academy for young French footballers. So the idea is bringing young French players into Glasgow to combine English, believe it or not, and football. So that's very much alive and well, you know. So, but yeah, you're right. We would love to have more representation from France on the ownership group for sure.
It's interesting that you mention comparatively few UK investors, because when we first spoke, you talked about not having a local fan base, and you said that might be a good thing for you. But are you still working towards establishing a local fan base?
Yeah, of course. Listen, I don't think I would ever say it's not a good. It's a good thing not having a local fan base. I think it's something that I don't think we should be overly concerned about. And as much as what we try to do with this club is flip the narrative that you need to be local to a specific stadium to be a community club. You know, with internet, with social media, with apps, anyone who has shared vision, you know, ambition and values, it can be a global community. But to answer your question, we're very much working on getting fans to Alliance Park. You know, we've seen more and more people coming to the games. We've seen them coming back and bringing friends. But that's always going to be a challenge for us, if I'm being honest. I mean, being realistic, you've got Glasgow Rangers and Glasgow Celtic on your doorstep, and that's not even mentioning some of the other professional clubs like Motherwell, you know, Clyde, Hamilton. You know, there's so many professional football clubs and semi-professional clubs in a 10-mile radius of where we play, so that's always going to be the challenge. But that's why we have to be different, you know. That's why we keep shouting from the rooftops about giving fans a voice, giving owners the opportunity to own the club. If you go to Rangers or Celtic, I don't know how much, you know, Kieran would be a better place to tell me, but the average Rangers or Celtic fan, how much do they spend in a year? You know, whether it's season tickets or merchandising. You know, it's a lot of money, and they probably don't get much back from that, you know.
They get a lot of angst.
Yeah.
I think, Chris, certainly people in England don't realise how strong non-league football is in Scotland. I mean, the Lowland Leagues and the Highland Leagues are very, very high quality, aren't they?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's you would be surprised for sure. You know, it's a tough league. It's probably, I mean, I'm probably a bit biased, but it's probably the best value for money we get. I mean, our home tickets are a fiver, you know, so we try and do a fiver, affordable football. So I think, again, we're probably I don't like to use the word cheap, but we're probably the cheapest ticket for a game in the Premier League, in the Pyramid, you know. So it's a good standard of football. There's a lot of players that have played at a high level, whether they're coming to the end of their career or whether they've maybe just, you know, been released from some of the pro clubs and looking to try and bounce back. But it's certainly a good standard, and I would encourage anybody that can come up on maybe a ground hopping day, or, you know, just jump in the car, come up, watch a game next season, maybe go and see Hampden Park, see the football museum in there, you know, maybe go and catch a Rangers or a Celtic game and make a day of it, because Glasgow's certainly a great city. It's got a lot to offer, and Scotland as well is a fantastic country.
And you're doing really well, considering how, you know, the name change is new. The new identity is only sort of 2-3 years old. So you've actually done well to establish yourself so strongly in that short space of time, haven't you? And that's without the investment that you're getting now.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we've always had to, I don't like saying it like this, but we've always had to fight for everything, you know, and I'm almost probably at my best when I need to fight for things, you know. If it's too comfortable, there's a problem. You know, we tried to get into the Lowland League by application when it was first set up. We were refused twice. We were refused membership of the SFA the first time of asking, so we had to go back, and the SFA invited me into to the boardroom to fight my corner, and I did, and finally we got membership of the SFA. We were told by the Lowland League, if we wanted into the Lowland League, we would have to win the South of Scotland League. With Julie O'Blige, we became the first club in the history of Scottish football to win Tier 6 and get promoted up through the Pyramid. So we always have to kind of fight for everything, which is fine. I mean, most clubs would say that, I think, you know. Yeah, you know, it's just that we're the youngest senior football club in Scotland, you know, so it's all very new to us. But I think Ricky Waddle the head coach, has to take a lot of credit, because he has done extremely well. I mean, this season, for example, we lost 9 players in the close season, 7 starters. So he had like 30 guys in the week before the season started on trial, and he's managed to get a squad that's competitive in the Lowland League. So we're firmly established as a good mid-table Lowland League team, but we're not far away, I think, with some new additions to being able to fight at the top end of the table next season. I think that's what we're all hoping for.
And tell us about the ground situation, because you were looking last time we spoke at your own permanent stadium, weren't you?
Yeah, so we actually we play at a ground called Alliance Park. That's the owners that chose that name. That, again, is a nod and a wink, essentially, to the old alliance between France and Scotland. It's owned by the local authority, so it's North Lanarkshire Council that own it, so we have a long-term lease. We're very grateful to be able to play there because before that we were travelling down to Annan, which was 86 miles away for our home games, believe it or not, just because we need a ground that's club-licensed. But I think, and I've heard before some of your guests on this show before, some of the challenges that come with working with local authorities is quite difficult at times. You know, as much as we're grateful for the opportunity, sometimes we feel that our ambition is not matched by the local authority, you know, and that sometimes can be quite frustrating and it can hamstring us a little bit. But, you know, we're in the process of trying to, you know, see how we can overcome those hurdles, those short-term hurdles, and really either, you know, grow at Alliance Park or maybe further down the line, what's to say that we don't look for our own place with the right investment, with the right partners, the right stakeholders and build our own small facility that some other clubs have done in the lower league as well.
Yeah, because presumably at the moment you're missing out on match day income into, you know, catering, club shop and that sort of thing, aren't you?
No, I mean, that to that extent, that's not so much a problem. One of the major problems where we are at the moment is there's a real lack of public transport, so it's really difficult for fans to get there, you know, because it's in a country park as opposed to being in a, you know, in an estate, okay. or, you know, so that's one of the main things. But then beyond that, it's just the lack of lets for, you know, we would like to have our academy there, we'd like to have our boys' clubs there, you know, we'd like to be able to really have a real footprint at Alliance Park where we call it our own. But at the moment, you know, it's very difficult to have lets that would allow us to grow and grow our footprint within the local community. So that's frustrating. We'd like to have a women's team next year, you know, but at the moment, if we do that, we're probably going to have to play somewhere else with the women's team because, again, it's just the problem with lets, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, Kieran, this comes up so often with clubs lower down the pyramid when they all want to do the right thing by having women's teams and having multi-age teams, but they simply can't do it because of the practicalities and the finance. Even though we know that women aren't getting paid very much money to play, it still takes setting up. You still have to pay coaches. You still have to pay travel. So it's a difficult decision for a lot of clubs at a lower level to make, isn't it? Because it doesn't always look good to outsiders that a club hasn't got a women's team, but sometimes it's just impossible financially, isn't it?
There is that, and as Chris indicated, you've also got the practicalities. If it's not your ground, then councils tend to be conservative with a small c as well when it comes to any institution which is on their patch. So it doesn't mean that they're anti the football club. It's that they've got other priorities. A lot of the time they've got restricted budgets themselves. And the opportunities to grow here and to provide a community hub and to provide community facilities is something which gets sidelined because they'll prioritise other things.
Chris, it's been great to catch up with you, and it's really heartening to hear that you're still as enthusiastic and as passionate about the club as you were 12 months ago. It's a very obvious...
More so.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. More so. Why do you think that is then?
Because I'm absolutely buoyed by the love that's been shown to the club from around the world for people. Somebody in North Dakota wants to invest $100 in Caledonian Braves and says he or she loves the idea and loves the concept. That, how can that do anything other than buoy you and give you the motivation and the drive that you need to satisfy those folk?
That's interesting. So it makes you feel even more like you're a custodian, that you're looking after the club for the fans now rather than...
100%. You know, as the sole owner of a football club, it can be a very lonely place. But when you have people from around the world who believe in you, and I think to a certain extent, without being arrogant, I think when they buy into the club, I'm hoping that they believe in me to a certain extent, you know, and that encourages me and that motivates me. And I've met so many good people. There's been folk that have came to Scotland that I would consider my friends now through this project. And it's just, you know, I feel that I have a real responsibility to those owners to not disappoint them and to make sure that we fulfil the potential that we can with this club.
Mate, I was almost crushed by the responsibility of owning a fictional football team in a book we just wrote. So how you do it in real life, I don't know. I mean, this is a very obvious final question, Chris, because obviously you're very ambitious, and there is scope to grow. What's the next target? It's not the right word, but where do you see yourself being? If we were to talk this time in 2 years, where do you see yourself being?
I was going to say that the target's to be back on the show this time next year, being the first person to be on it three times, never mind two. That would be progress, because if I'm back here, then it means we're doing something right. So that's a good marker, so let's pencil that one in. I think to be honest with you, it's to continue to grow the community. I think On the Park is to have a strategy where we get promoted, probably in the next 2 years, if I'm being honest. But also where the club can become financially sustainable without myself and without the input of just the owners. You know, we can get good sponsors, you know, good partners, and we're going in the right direction. And I think, you know, we're only maybe a season or two away from being in that place. So it's really, really exciting.
Brilliant. Chris, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And actually, if you are the third person on, you'll beat Neil Doncaster, because he's the only one we've had on twice. So that'll be a good opportunity.
Polarizing character, Neil. just a quick one as well. I don't know. I mean, just a quick one. We're working with a company down in England called Acid FC, who are actually designing our kit. So you mentioned about Lecoq Sportif. So that's one of the things that we're going to be launching a kit in July that's going to be Lecoq Sportif. So it's going to be their return to football in the UK.
Oh, wow.
And that's going to be designed by a company in Leeds called Acid FC, who actually designed Leeds United's kit last season. Very well respected in that space of, you know, football and design and fashion. And we will have Amnesty International on the kit as well. I think it's the first time that Amnesty International have allowed the use of their logo on a football kit in the UK. So that's just a wee side bit for you guys.
Well, that's really exciting news to end with. And you've already got two sales. I mean, that's why you do. You're a clever owner. That's brilliant. That's really good news to him. Chris, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and we will definitely book you in for this time next year.
Guys, thanks very much for having me. Have a lovely day. Okay, cheers. And welcome to Scotland anytime.
It's very hard not to get swept away with Chris's enthusiasm. And as much as I was interested in the finance model and the fact that so many Americans have invested into the club, I was particularly interested in that notion of having a mixed full-time, part-time thing, that you could actually have a squad where the younger players are full-time and some of the older players could still, you know, the ones with families could still hold down other jobs as well to help pay their mortgages. I thought that was an interesting concept.
It's interesting. I also think it's very pragmatic, because Chris said that they got a playing budget of £47,000. That's not going to allow many people to have, you know, significant income streams. If you are a younger player, you've been released from another club, you know, in some of the more senior leagues, the chances are that you're willing to, and also able, you know, your personal circumstances, you've not got the baggage of, the baggage that you acquire as you get a wee bit older. You've still got the older guys who probably acknowledge you're not going to get a full-time contract elsewhere, so part-time, and they've started to look outside of football for their careers. So you can see the benefits, and I think Chris is very enthusiastic about the project, and you know, we wish him all the best with regards to that. But he also seems to be able to think outside the box as well.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod, that would be very kind of you, and it will get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And you can go to priceoffootball.com if you'd like to buy our book or get yourself a Price of Football t-shirt. We'll be back with our questions pod on Monday. Have a lovely weekend, everybody. Bye now.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.